Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm like Adam Pranica.
What does that mean?
I just responded to a tweet that was like, hey, guys, maybe you should stop using the word like so much.
Well, that person can, like, lick my, like, anus hole.
I sent him a picture of a guy doing that. You've seen that picture before of like the guy reaching into the robot butt proctology exam simulator. And I was like, sorry, I file all vocal critiques in a special Greatest Gen branded cabinet. Thanks for listening. That's a robot butt.
We got a funny letter from a listener, Adam, that I thought I might read for our Marin Open today.
That'll make me feel better.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
This was couched amidst a bunch of other stuff that I'll leave out because it's just business, but...
Oh, yeah?
Listener Justin sent in the following story. I have been with you and Adam from the start of The Greatest Generation, back when it seemed like a low-budget pod that my friends and I could do if we were not so lazy. The show is amazing now, and it has been great seeing it grow. Anyways, one day, I was playing it at work when a coworker asked me what the hell I had on. I told her about the show, and then magic happened. A little backstory, I have worked with this person in different jobs over the last 7 years, and have come to know her very well. So after I told her about your show and she said she had a story, I knew it would be good. Do you remember Will, the guy I dated that we worked with? He once told me that he was in Star Trek. He said he was really young and all he did was hold a chicken. That's right. She fucked the chicken boy from Up the Long Ladder. Made my day and I hope it makes yours.
You know how bad... You know, like, occasionally people ask us, why do you say you're so embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast? The answer to that question, Ben, is that this guy would rather be known as Chicken Boy than a person who was on Star Trek.
I hope this doesn't end Justin's friendship with his coworker. I hope she hasn't become a listener, I guess is what I'm saying. If she hears this and then feels like super insulted.
I think when we can be fairly certain of that, Ben.
Well, this show has ended many friendships, Adam.
It may even end our own.
Oh yeah, it's definitely put it through as big a stress test as you could ever possibly imagine.
Yeah, indeed.
Who is the extra that would be the most exciting person to discover somebody had had a intimate interlude with?
I don't know. Like, I like the idea of khaki pants guy being a great stick man. like just a legendary stick man. That would be hilarious to me. Yeah. That's why he's wearing those baggy pants, Ben.
He's got a lot of meat to conceal.
What about you?
I don't know. I mean, there's some one of the ladies from this episode that we're reviewing today would be a fun one.
Oh,
the
yeah?
lady with the kind of like prog rock haircut and side of head loaf.
There is there's some amazing hair in this episode, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should stop imagining having sex with people other than our wives. I'd get into the episode, Adam. What do you say?
I'm into that, Ben. Let's talk about it. Season 7, Episode 4, Gambit, Part 1.
Well, Adam, we have another episode here that starts in a Star Wars cantina. And another episode where one of the female characters is in a Star Wars cantina using sex to get something.
That's right, Ben. We're inside a bar on Desica 2, which is obviously the planet that makes those packets you see inside of beef jerky.
I was in a movie with a friend one time, and we had bought like a pack of trail mix or something at the concession stand on the way in.
Uh-huh.
And in the darkened theater, he assumed that he had discovered some flavor packet and ripped open the desiccant and dumped it onto his palm and then licked it.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
he was really uncomfortable.
I mean, I can only assume the dry mouth that followed.
Yeah. Have you ever dumped table salt on a slug?
Yeah, that's...
That's what he looked like when the lights came up.
Oh, no. Your friend's dead?
Yeah, he died. RSVP, my friend.
Yeah. When our favorite bridge crew people go undercover, they don't really bother to change clothing too much. Like, these are things that they, I think, have found in their own closets.
Yeah, they're just civilian garb. They're not blending in with the local hoi polloi in this bar at all. They look too clean to be in this bar, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you gotta read the room, right? You don't go into a dive bar wearing a suit, you know?
They look like a bunch of peewees in a biker bar.
Yeah, they do.
I'm trying to use the phone!
It'd be really fun if there was a shot of Worf, like, leaning against somebody's shuttle parked outside, and it knocks over the shuttle, and then, like, the, like a domino effect, all of the shuttles knock over.
I would love to just see a shuttlecraft parking lot. That'd be great.
That would be a nice little matte painting. I never get.
It's probably the sort of establishment that doesn't have a valet, though.
No, yeah. This is a gravel parking lot kind of place.
Yeah, totally.
They find this loafy hogget-looking guy.
Yeah, he's the second Eurydian we've seen, right?
Yeah. They're looking into what happened to a bald man, and you know, it's pretty clear from the way they're talking that they're looking for the captain. And this guy basically, he kind of has the same gambit that Lovie Hoggett had with Worf, which is, I have information, but I want to be compensated for it.
I feel like Eurydians might be diet Ferengi a little bit, right? But they're not as comical.
Yeah, they have the same shuffling gait, but they're not, and they have big ears.
Yeah. Yeah, this Eurydian looks a lot like the Eurydian that told Worf that they were living Khitomer Klingons on that one planet.
Loafy Hoggett.
Yeah, but this Eurydian has like honey glazed loaf. He's got like brown face, while Loafy Hoggett was pink.
He has a swarthier loaf, and he has a lot more hair, if memory serves.
Yeah, the hair is really not doing him any favors in the looks department, I think. You know, you get to a certain point with a hairline, you might as well just shave it off.
Yeah, he's got kind of like a Larry David type of situation where it's just a real mass of curls on the back of his head.
Yeah. He left his laptop on a table across the restaurant. He asked someone to look at it for him while he went to the bathroom. It's a real problem.
Yeah. The proprietor of the bar is not excited that this guy is going to tell them what he knows, right?
Yeah, it's a real don't snitch type of environment. Like, Troy started using her sex appeal on the bartender, and that didn't really work. There's a, like, everyone sort of split up and used their guile to get information. Riker has left a conversation, like, backslapping and high-fiving. Like, he's obviously getting along fine. Riker was sort of made for this kind of mission, right?
Yeah, I mean, Riker can charm the pants off of just about anybody, and that includes, you know, quasi-criminal element type people like the folks in this bar.
Right.
The bartender, as they're plying the Iridian for information, kind of comes up and goes, you know, gives him the snitches get stitches line, and the Iridian's like, do you think a scar would show up on my face as anything other than just one of my wrinkles? I don't care about you. I'm telling them.
I'm a man of 200 face folds. Like, do you really think that's going to read? I bet he got through puberty just fine. I don't think acne's the top of his concerns.
Either that or it is the only concern he had.
Yeah. It's fairly clear that this guy is willing to exchange bald guy information for money. And I feel like this is a little bit of Deep Space Nine leakage, right? We're getting more and more conversation about currency in this universe, more than we've ever gotten before, especially around the Iridians.
Gold-pressed latinum has become a thing that everybody wants.
Right.
What's the deal with it? The idea is that it can't be replicated, and that's why it's valuable?
I would have to watch Deep Space Nine to really have that trivia. Like, I don't know.
Because their communicator badges are made out of gold, right? Gold is like a cheap commodity in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
The Iridian tells them that he watched the bald human they're looking for get knocked down in the corner and shot on the gore setting. And the doctor goes over and she's finding all of these kind of corroborating details about that.
I'm picking up Starfleet fiber traces and human cellular debris.
I guess they decide to leave with the Iridian, right? They take him with them because they want to.
Yeah, the Iridian's copying this whole attitude of like, well, you know, the bartender just threatened me about the whole snitching thing. And, you know, if you want more information out of me, maybe you could take me to your ship, put me up in a condo, and then drop me off a couple blocks over. That way I'll be safe from these assholes.
The crew is really easy to manipulate in this way because they are convinced that their captain is dead.
Yeah, and that's our cold open.
Pretty good cold open.
I don't know if the Iridians can be trusted, Ben. I'm just going to say that right now.
They seem to have kind of a track record at this point of providing information that is adventure starting, but not necessarily true.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Any sort of exposition by Worf here would probably be welcome. Like a quick turn to Riker and going like, I don't believe these Iridians can be trusted. You remember that experience I had exactly 3 episodes ago? Didn't work out great. Guy left me in the lurch. He was my getaway driver.
You know how we're calling back to previous episodes sometimes now? Well, listen to this. When we come back from our title sequence, there's a pretty emotional scene between Riker and Troy.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
She's kind of trying to talk him into setting up a memorial service for the captain.
The crew's pretty shaken up.
And he's really dealing with his emotions by pushing them to the side while he hunts down the people that vaporized the captain. The mission, as it is stated at this point, is all about, you know, bringing these fugitives to justice.
There's something very exciting about a vengeance-motivated Riker.
What does it mean?
It means omerta. It means rewenge.
He goes so far as to ask an admiral to not report to class that day and to go do independent study, basically. Admiral's like, yeah, go for it. Like, I'm going to cut you loose from your mission. You go do you.
His line is, your mission is at your discretion.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's the best kind of mission, I think.
Yeah.
Ben, how soon after you're reported missing would you prefer to have a funeral?
Well, he's not just reported missing. I mean, they have an eyeball wit that's saying he got gored.
That's just it, man. Like, can you hang a funeral arrangement on the word of a Iridian? I don't think so. I think you need a corroborating witness, and I don't think they have one.
Well, don't you think that the behavior of the bartender makes them believe that what this guy is saying is true?
This shit wouldn't fly on Law and Order, I don't think.
I think that the narrative rules of Law and Order are substantially different from the narrative rules of Star Trek. Just going out on a limb here.
Troy and Riker do big work at the beginning of this episode, just sort of teaching the viewer how to feel about the situation.
I know you're angry.
You're damn right!
Because if neither of them peg the needle in their respective ways emotionally...
Do you think you have the monopoly on loss?
I don't feel like you could believe for a second that Picard's actually dead. Like, you need them to go all the way in how they manage their grief to go along with the presupposition that he's dead.
We're all hurting, and we're all angry. And whether you like it or not, you have a responsibility to this crew.
Like, any sort of half measure there, I don't think does the job.
Yeah, it's a substantial ask of the viewer to sit through a title sequence where Patrick Stewart's name is the first one that pops up on screen, and then come back and have two characters talking about how Patrick Stewart is dead.
Yeah.
I am the kind of viewer that is willing to extend that suspension of disbelief, but let's be honest, like, this is as suspended as disbelief can possibly get.
Full disbelief suspension. It's a suspension bridge of disbelief, Ben. You know the engineering it takes to build one of those?
Yeah, it's like you suspend your disbelief from one end, you get to the other end, you go back and you start over. You're constantly resuspending.
Like painting the Golden Gate.
Uh-huh. But I agree. Like, they really take it to 11. She's, you know, he's saying, like, I don't want to do a memorial service until I've sorted out the justice thing. And she's like, Captain Picard was Jewish. You have to hold a memorial immediately. And then you sit Shiva for 7 days. And he's like, well, that's not how we do it in my family.
Worf's like, Jewish, you say?
I'm not hearing a no.
I'll take over from here. My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which
longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again. The whole crew is a little out of sorts here. Like, that scene sets a tone, and, you know, we get, like, Data trying to kind of figure out how to be first officer, and he's not having an easy time.
As acting first officer, I must question your decision to accompany the away team. If Captain Picard were here,
he's not.
In a way, like, this is where Data should always have been. He's a great first officer.
He was a great first officer to Jellicoe, and I feel like he's much less sure of himself being a first officer to Riker, because I think Riker doesn't care about the rule book quite as much as Jellicoe did.
Yeah.
You know, the first conflict they have is Riker announcing that he's going to lead an away mission and Data kind of trying to feel out, like, how he's supposed to level an objection to that. Not really sure what footing he's on with Riker.
It was a great move by him to find out, though, in private.
I thought it was really interesting to see him have a tough time with that, because it's, in a lot of ways, a very similar job to second officer. You know, I'm sure a lot of department heads report to him as head of ops.
I don't know how deeply this show thinks about stuff like this, but this scene mirrors a scene in part two where Worf is a terrible second officer, or Worf is a terrible first officer and does it exactly wrong, in exactly the wrong way, in exactly the opposite way that Data does here.
Now, how would you know that, Adam?
Well, all I'm saying, I think it is okay to consider part one and part two part of the same thing when you're talking about a review and critique podcast show.
Well, that presupposes that we don't have vetoes that may get brought to bear, Adam. You may have, it sounds like you went ahead and watched an episode with little regard to whether I would veto it or not.
Whoa. I stopped caring about your feelings long ago, Ben.
You're tearing me apart, Adam.
Oh boy, Adam and Ben are fighting again.
The other thing that happens early in this episode is the Iridian is like hanging around in the condo that they give him, and Riker stops by, and the Iridian's like, he's got like everything he can possibly fit on a table replicated up to eat. Like, he's really got a spread for himself, and he's like, hey, listen, this place isn't decorated that good.
I was wondering if you could move me to better quarters.
And Riker really puts the screws to him. He's like, how about instead of nicer place, I don't turn you over to the Klingons?
Yeah, how does Klingon prison camp sound as an upgrade to you?
Punishment means exile from prison to the surface.
And the guy's like, oh, I get so cold mining for dilithium on Rurapente.
I'd really rather prefer a place with stockades.
I'd like to stay around species where I know where they keep their genitals, please. He spills some more dirt about like where they might find the baddies. So they jet over to this planet that's kind of like the, you know, it actually kind of reminded me of the part of California that Max Funcon takes place in.
Yeah, up in Lake Arrowhead.
Up at a planet Rim Forest.
Yeah. That Rim Forest is out of control up there.
Yeah, they really need to consider a little bit of manscaping with their Rim Forest.
I don't know, man. You start clear-cutting your Rim Forest, that solves one problem and starts another.
They find a lot of scorch marks on the Earth where, you know, they're like, what the hell are these marks? They don't really look like phaser blasts, but something's up. And somebody finds a bunch of pottery on the ground and immediately gets phasered. And what proceeds is the missingest firefight of all time. Like, more shots are fired that don't connect than any other time in this show's history, I feel like.
This is a foam stone holocaust. This is crazy. It's a 70 shot phaser fight is what I read, Ben. This is the most phaserific fight in Star Trek history.
And yet only one guy takes one, and he's the guy that buys it for looking at some pots at right at the beginning. Like, everybody else gets to cover pretty quickly, and then it's just phaser, 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 nothing, nothing, nothing.
This is such bad sniping by the guy who took that shot. Like, you basically have a guaranteed kill here by taking the first shot from cover, and you get the front zip?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Let me get that extra that doesn't have any lines.
I see a guy in a front zip with a bad haircut. Make an example of him.
Yeah. It's like a marine in an island campaign shooting at everybody but the guy with the sword.
Is it just me, or are the background actors and extra actors even more obvious this season than any other? They really stick out.
I feel like they have like one weird wig for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is. They are not fading into the periphery like they usually do.
Well, the people that they are in this firefight against are a Romulan, a lady that looks like a, I don't know, she kind of looks like she could be a bad guy in the Double Dragon video game. And then a guy that looks like he probably invented the hacky sack.
Yeah, he looks like the mind blown meme guy. Yeah. With like his two hands by his head. You know that guy?
Yeah. He could only be... Yeah, he's from Planet Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a motley crew, but they manage to blow up a styrofoam rock that Riker is standing near, which knocks him out. They run over and flip Riker over, and they're like, well, let's get out of here and let's take this guy with us. And the rest of the away team watches in shock as their commander / acting captain disappears with these bad aliens.
Cut to Worf, who has been firing indiscriminately for the last minute.
And not hitting anything.
Suddenly, like, hold his fire just to watch this scene. Like, everyone stands still for a good 5 seconds, and he doesn't take a shot. Come on, Worf.
There's a lot of jaw-on-floor shit happening here that is not... Yeah, like, this is bad directing, right?
Get in the game, Worf.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all.
We're just going down the chain of command here as one by one Enterprise senior staff are being taken or killed. Not a good look.
Yeah, Data is now the captain of the ship.
I wish we got a scene of field promotions every time, like like as a recurring leitmotif. That would have been fun.
That would have been fun.
Like with different decorations in the ready room every time too.
Yeah, like Data comes in and like clears out all of Riker's shit.
Put Spot cat box.
I hate cats.
Data's cat.
Spot.
I love cats.
Up on the desk.
What's the deal? They can't track the ship because the ship is... The bad guy's ship is like... Has like that matte black paint, so it disappears when the lights are off.
Yeah, it's... It's like the sci-fi equivalent of a stealth bomber ship, you know? Like, the Enterprise radar can't really pick it up.
It's not cloaked, but it's real hard for their sensors to get a lock on it when it's out of visual range.
Right.
Which seems like every ship should have that, right?
Yeah, it seems great.
That seems good.
I think that's what you want in a mercenary ship.
Or just the flagship of the Federation. Like, why give them any opportunity to shoot you?
The stealth plating goes a long way towards forgiving the idea that the ship looks like a tick.
You now face the tick and his fearless sidekick, Arthur.
You're saying the Patrick Warburton tick, or are you the actual insect, Adam?
Yeah.
Good Patrick Warburton, Adam.
That's all you have to say to do a great P-War.
Oh, man.
No one does a better Patrick Warburton than Jordan Morris, for my money.
Yeah.
That guy's the best.
I mean, Jesse Thorne is no slouch, but yeah. That's one of my favorite recurring bits on that show.
Yeah.
They have a McLaughlin group.
Issue
and
one.
They talk about how this ship is going to be hard to track, and they're going to have to come up with some other creative ideas for how to get the commander back. Like, they're not positive that Commander Riker is alive, but they want to do something about it. And I feel like this scene is where it is revealed that the job Data really wants is not first officer, but captain.
Yeah.
He's loving us.
He does that, like, tenting his fingers pensively move. like the leadership tent is what that is. That move with your hands. Like,
yeah.
That's unquestionably a power move. He's like jacked his seat up a little bit higher than everyone else.
Yeah.
He's running the whole playbook.
He's running around with his chest puffed out. Yeah. Worf is like, come on, man, we gotta go chase those guys. And he says, on the contrary, what we're gonna do is investigate the surface of the planet and see what these guys were up to down here. And that'll give us insights into where they might be going.
He is so decisive here, it is refreshing. He's not polling the crew. He's got an idea in mind, and that's what they're going to do. It's great.
Yeah, he's no joke. He is ruling with an iron / polycarbonate fist.
He's ruling with a detachable fist. We cut to Riker on this mercenary ship, and he gets to meet the crew there. Some of them are made up from the people we saw on the surface, and then he meets this leader, this guy who is sort of cosplaying as Viggo the Carpathian from Ghostbusters 2.
I want Warp 8 available in 5 hours, and I don't want to hear your excuses.
What was will be, what is will be no more.
I kind of thought it was like if Khan Noonien Soong cosplayed as Viggo.
Yeah.
It's got some real hair metal vibes. I love how weird this alien crew is. Like, everybody's a different weirdo.
The Khan vibes are totally legit because everyone's got a torture device attached to their neck that ensures their allegiance to him. It's a lot easier than implanting earbuds, right?
Yeah. I was wondering if he got this thing from the Cardassians. It's a lot like that thing that English Cardassian guy had, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's familiar.
What was that guy's name? Morlek? Gull
Madred?
Maset? Madred? Yeah. That sounds right.
You can just leave the one in that we got right.
Or the gull soup that we made and trying to remember it.
They do the around the horn where Riker gets to meet everyone, and then guess who wheels around in his office chair? J.L. Pipes as Galen, who is a brown leather daddy.
Yeah, that's kind of like the Ren Fair version of a leather daddy.
Yeah.
Speaking of J.L. Pipes, Adam, did you see that a couple of our viewers got a dog and named her J.L. Pipes?
I did see that.
Isn't that the greatest?
It's funny sometimes how dogs look like their names. And this dog really does. Like, I don't know if it's the eye width and spacing or what, but like, I can totally see the resemblance.
She's got a real J.L. Pipes vibe to her.
Yeah.
Real cute dog.
Really doesn't get close to women, like, as a dog. Sort of prefers solitude. Really likes digging for antiquities and bones.
Yeah.
I think it's a great name.
Can quote Shakespeare at length.
Hates mother-in-laws.
Awesome at flute.
Yeah.
The deal here is that these guys are like mercenaries / kind of, I don't know, like Indiana Jones types. Like they're like relic thieves.
I totally dig the idea of space pirates, Ben.
Yeah. I wish there was more of them in this series.
Well, the reason that there aren't is because it's a Roddenberry edict. He said very specifically, like, that was one of the rules. No space piracy depicted. Isn't that fucked up?
That is strange. I mean, I think that in Deep Space Nine especially, they really go hard in the other direction. Because there's, like, organized crime and shit in that series.
Ben, I've got an anecdote for you.
Lay it on me, brother.
Gambit grew out of a spec script, but it broke one of Gene Roddenberry's long-standing Star Trek taboos, specifically that there would be no such thing as space pirates on Star Trek. So Rick Berman, aware of the taboo, was willing to consider the script, but he tied a red bandana around the bust of Gene Roddenberry that he kept on his desk. Which is the most fucked up part of that story? The whole idea of there being a ban on space piracy stories, or the fact that Rick Berman kept a bust of Gene Roddenberry on his desk?
That's, I would have figured weird, Gene, right? Roddenberry for a Crip.
I don't know, man. Like, here's the thing, though. Like, lionizing the creator of the show is fine. But, like, you do too much of that and you get the Star Wars prequels.
Do you think when Gene Roddenberry was pitching the story, he was like, yeah, we'll call him Baptin Picard? Because you know how bloods always replace C's at the beginning of words with B's?
I did not know that, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
You sure do know a lot about gangs.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're so willing to throw out the Roddenberry rules, like other Roddenberry rules here. Why be so precious about the piracy thing, especially if it opens up so many more stories.
I mean, this is it's interesting because it's definitely a very fun and interesting storyline, but feels a little like, oh, we don't quite know what to do with this.
Yeah, it feels like they don't really want to commit to the world building it would take to convince us that there are lots of pirates out there and that this is a culture.
Or even that there's some pirates out there.
Yeah.
I mean, what about the guy that has Data as a trophy?
Yeah.
Is that guy not a pirate?
What about that whole planet full of wrestlers that they found that were nothing but pirates? That was like a season 2 episode.
Yeah. I feel like this rule is a little bit weird. A little bit inconsistently enforced.
I think maybe the bust belongs in the lobby instead of on your desk.
Well, maybe it's like the trigger to the secret sex dungeon that's on the other side of the bookcase or whatever.
Yeah, you just tilt his head back.
Yeah.
And then forward. And then back. And then forward.
I gotcha.
So, real big surprise in this reveal. Riker is relieved to see him, but not emoting that. He needs to figure out what Picard's deal is and whose side he's on.
Yeah, because Picard is talking, kill this dude.
I say kill him.
They're talking to Riker and like trying to get some info out of him, and Picard is like, this guy used to be on the hood. He's bad news.
Ask DeSoto. He'll tell you.
What Riker might that be?
Commander of the Enterprise, formerly assigned to the USS Hood.
That shouldn't intimidate anybody, but maybe these guys don't know what the Hood's reputation is.
Cut to the ready room in the Hood, and DeSoto's like got his feet up on his desk, like whatever the ship equivalent of the phone is. It's just ringing and ringing and ringing. He's got no time for that.
He's like filing his nails.
We got to put the spurs in this episode, Ben.
I know. We're fucking around too much. I just want to talk about DeSoto's collection of emery boards, though, so much.
Did you recognize the Vulcan person on this crew?
Should I have?
Yeah, that was Savick from the third and fourth Star Trek movies.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, the woman who replaced Kirstie Alley.
Yeah. That's interesting. She's flexing like she's Romulan, right?
Yeah, and
she's repping Romulan?
She is, and she also, like, if there's such a thing as co-leaders on this ship, I mean, it's Baran and it's T'Lara, really.
Yeah.
And she might actually hold more power than even Baran does.
Yeah, she doesn't have the neck pain zap gizmo, but she's got a lot of woofy on the ship, and she seems to be playing her own game. She's not necessarily an underling as such.
She at least has the ability to, like, she has her own agency, right? She can go talk to Picard if she wants to. She can go talk to Riker if she wants to. Like, she can sort of slink around to her own ends.
The way Riker gets out of getting fragged by Baran is they realize that they're having some engine trouble, and Riker's like, well, I know how to solve this exact kind of engine trouble. And there's some kind of like wink-wink happening between him and Picard.
I've had a lot of experience with this sort of systems failure. I might be able to do something.
He gets on the ship's computer and fairly swiftly sorts everything out. And they're like, wow, you're actually pretty useful. So we'll keep you around for now.
So at this point, like, I think we cut to Picard as Galen doing his duty on this ship, right? He's taking pieces of pottery out of boxes. He's sticking them on a computer table. The computer table's telling him whether or not it's a positive or negative for what they're looking for. At this point, we aren't exactly sure what it is they're looking for, but we can tell based on the number of storage racks in the cargo bay and the amount of work that Picard has to do in scanning them that they've been at this for a while and they haven't found what they're looking for yet.
It seems like fairly automated work, though, right? He just puts the thing in and the computer tells him thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah, the ship has the stealth plating, but it doesn't have the robot inside that does this work.
Yeah, the Romulan lady comes down and he's like, I'm super useful, you know, like I'm still, like, you can't kill me in the heist hit list yet. I'm still doing something that you guys need me to do. And she kind of tips part of her hand a little bit in this scene where she says, you know, maybe not, but, and maybe like, I have some of my own agendas here, and maybe I think Baran is shitty, but I don't necessarily think you're like leadership material yourself.
It seems pretty clear that the only thing holding this crew together is the torture devices on everyone's necks and the promise of becoming paid at the end of this mission. Like, everyone's being kept in the dark about what they're doing.
Have you ever had a job where you felt like the client had a torture device that you were going to be subjected to until the job was done?
Yeah, the torture device is always the deadline.
Yeah. There's something about this that felt kind of familiar.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the kind of climactic scene in the episode is the bad guys plus Riker and Picard run into the entrepreneur in orbit over a colony. And it's a Federation colony that, and so like the, I guess like they've gotten Riker to kind of like get on the FaceTime with the lieutenant that's running the colony and try and convince him to let them, you know, steal everything in peace, like drop your shield so that we can beam up your artifacts. Lieutenant's not budging, and it's pretty clear that he's buying time.
If you'd like, you can remain in orbit until we contact the Science Council. But we're experiencing some communication difficulties right now, so that
this isn't working.
And so they wind up with the entrepreneur like running up on them, and they get into a firefight with them.
One of those firefights, though, where, like, people on each ship are dialing down the strength of their weapons. It's like sparring and boxing.
Yeah, like, Data picks up on this pretty quickly, that Riker's sending him some kind of subterfuge, which is kind of the first time Data has ever picked up on subterfuge, I feel like. But he realizes what they need to do, and meanwhile, like, I guess Picard is probably like dialing down the strength of the mercenary ship's weapons. This is all for Baran's benefit. Like, they are making it look like they're in a real firefight so that Baran, you know, doesn't destroy the colony. But the end of the episode is literally like a freeze frame on lasers hitting the starboard nacelle of the entrepreneur.
Yeah,
it's not looking
laser
good.
Freeze frame.
Yeah,
that's a real sensitive part of the ship, Ben. Those are the testicles of the ship, aren't they? So sensitive.
Taking one in the stones. If you're cutting a comedy trailer about this episode, you're going to want to include that shot. So that's people's expectations.
And the commensurate sound effect.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we are left with yet another mid-season cliffhanger.
I feel like they're kind of in a rut with these cliffhangers. Like, this feels like it steals a lot of the tropes from Best of Both Worlds, where there is a untested acting captain on the bridge of the entrepreneur. You know, it's just shifting down the ranks one and doing the exact same thing as Best of Both Worlds, right?
Yeah, but for whatever reason, the stakes don't feel as high as they were in previous cliffhangers. Like, we know that there are agents on both ships sort of in a back channel way fighting to ensure each other's survival because of the value that they place on what's going on the other ship.
Right.
So at no point do you see, even during the freeze frame, that this is an event that could kill everyone.
It does not look like this phaser to the nacelle is doing any actual damage.
Right.
It's a weird no stakes to be continued.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Pretty weird, but I mean, way too much story for one episode. Like, has to be two. Glad it's two.
Glad it's two.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I mean, I think that it is not perfect or even great, but it's fun to watch and it moves, you know, like a lot of stuff happens, a lot of Star Trek-y stuff. I think maybe where like the two places that I think it really fails are the combat scenes and the kind of establishing a suspenseful set of stakes.
Yeah.
It kind of nukes the fridge, like the captain being dead and we're going to go ride for him is a much higher set of stakes than everybody's play fighting, slap boxing at the end.
That is a great point, because the promise this episode makes you in the beginning is that you're going to get a vengeful Riker, you know, burning down the universe, trying to get to who took Picard.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
And you're almost immediately deprived of that when Data takes command of the ship, you know?
Yeah, and Data is never going to burn anything down for anything. Like, he's a good captain, but he's too measured to give any kind of excitement.
I wonder if there was ever a version of this episode where it wasn't Riker and it was someone else who was taken prisoner and Riker got that chance to burn the world down. You know, chasing them down across the galaxy. That would have been fun. That is a variation of the Cannonball Run theme that could be super fun, but I have a feeling you'd have to blindfold the bust of Gene Roddenberry to get that one approved.
Yeah, you might have to hide the bust of Gene Roddenberry in your butt so that it can't see or hear.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ben. Not sure I can give this episode a full like because of so much promise unfulfilled. Like, you know, it's one thing to say like 70 shot phaser fight in the first 10 minutes and to think that in and of itself means fun and success, but when the fight itself is just like is 70 shots that go nowhere, like that's not satisfying.
It's not. You're right.
Also, really needed a grenade there. Where's the phaser grenade?
Yeah, where's the rocket launcher?
Hey, the weather girl is going to be on. But first, pass me the rocket launcher.
Yeah, need one of those. We also need some Priority One messages, Ben. Do we have any?
Yeah, we sure do. Let's go check them out.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have a personal Priority One message here. It is from Matt Grasso. It is for Natalie Grasso. It goes like this. Natalie, you just turned 4, so obviously your mom and I are not letting you listen to Greatest Gen yet. But
oh, thank God.
But if I do my job right, you should be hearing this in about 14 years, having fallen in love with TNG and then this show. If you do hear this, I just want you to know that I'm proud of you and I love you. If not, I guess I blew it. Love, your dad.
I love the idea of hiding a message that will only be meaningful if the person finds it.
Message in a podcast bottle.
Yeah.
Pretty fun, Matt. Good job. Raise her right, Matt.
Sounds like he's on the right track.
Yeah, I think so. You got your Mr. Rogers when it's age appropriate. You got your Streets of Sesame when it's age appropriate. And then many, many years after that, you've got your Greatest Gen. We'll get you through puberty, Natalie.
Adam, we have another one here, and it is from #Rascals. Sam, Raz, L, Kimberly, Josh, AJ, Michael, Amy, Brittany, The Gooch, Jason, and Other.
I love just hearing The Gooch.
And it's for Plavim. Now, when you're telling Plavim to go fuck himself, you want to be sure to attach your safety harness to a secure location. The pure force of your hatred is liable to cause you to lose your footing a bit. I recommend Milladura Flex Python Harness, which is both flexible and fully OSHA compliant. Join the team that hates Plavim. Rascals. #Rascals.
Rascals are a thing. Man.
I love that just starting a sentence with the word now forces us to start talking in Boston accent.
It's true.
We are such victims of the success of that that bit.
If supporters of Raz are named Rascals, what are the supporters of Plavim called?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Plavimophiles? See, that's just making fun of Plavim again. I can't help but be a rascal.
Wow. I kind of fall in Team Plavim just because Plavim has spent so much more money supporting our show.
Yeah. I also have a soft spot for the Gooch.
Yeah. That's a fun one.
Well, if you have a soft spot for the greatest gen, one of the greatest ways to support the show is by filling out a Priority One message form by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal Priority One messages are $100, and commercial messages are $200. They are a great way to support the ongoing production of our show. Thanks, guys.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website, or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself? No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a brown leather-clad drunk Shimoda?
Shimoda. I did not. I found a different one.
Yeah?
You know, Adam, when we give out the Drunk Shimoda Award to cite the character that is having the most fun or doing the silliest thing.
That's the rule.
But I am going to give a special charity Shimoda in this episode to the character that's sort of furthest from that ideal. Just because I felt so bad for her when Data first takes over as captain, there's a new ensign at the ops station, Ensign Giusti, and boy, does this character get a thankless task of just kind of like describing the alien ship getting away. Like, there are no model shots or any special effects to make this fun to experience. Like, she just has to sit there and like pretend to tap away at the control panel and describe how the bad guys are getting out of there. And I thought, for as dumb a bit of script as this was, she did a perfectly good job delivering it. But boy, what a thankless task.
Ben, I would have expected someone with your Cosby expertise would have recognized her.
I mean, yeah, but I
as the actress who played Sandra Huxtable.
Yeah, I'm not trying to shoehorn every possible Cosby reference into the show, Adam.
I think that's good, because I don't think she should be typecast as a Cosby actor.
No.
That is a stink you don't want at this point.
She played this part well, I think.
I think
I want to know more about this character. I wish we had any indication that she was going to be a recurring character.
Ben, I think she's emblematic of what's happened in season 7, which is any peripheral actor either getting really bad dialogue to read or maybe only being given one or two takes to deliver it, because I don't feel like anyone outside of the crew's senior staff is believable in delivery at all this season. Like, it's not working for me. Am I just too sensitive to any non-senior staff actors right now? I don't know what it is, but I feel like they're really slipping.
I feel like you've got a Roddenberry bust up your butt about this particular performance, Adam, because I liked Sabrina LaBeouf's performance here.
All right.
I'm just saying the chunk of script that got dropped in her lap was a turd.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's forgivable. When there's a turd in your lap.
How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda, Adam?
I do, Ben. It's a scene/Geordi Shimoda. There's a scene early on. I think it's like almost as soon as the away team beams down to the planet.
The
Rim Forest planet. They're doing their archaeological investigation, looking at scorch marks and stuff. Riker's talking to Geordi, and he walks up and he puts his leg up on a rock, and then Geordi does the same thing, talking back to him. And that just struck me because the scene was outside. Like, that's exactly how Rikers in the wild greet each other. Like, you put your leg up on that rock. And it also struck me as, like, when you don't direct an actor, a lot of times what they'll do is mirror the thing that they're seeing in someone else's performance. And I was wondering, like, if in that exact scene, like, LeVar Burton just sort of like, oh, what am I going to do with my legs? Frakes is putting his leg up. I'm going to do that too. So that just seemed funny to me to see two actors talking to each other, mirroring the Riker leg move.
I mean, if I'm in a headcanon, what Burton's motivation is there, it's not what am I going to do with my leg, it's like, oh, you're putting your leg up on a rock, well, two can play at that game, freaks.
yeah, that Riker lean, he'll find a way to do it in any situation.
Yeah, whether or not there's a thing to put his foot up on, he will somehow do it.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 5, Gambit, Part 2. Picard and Riker masquerade as mercenaries in order to retrieve a potentially lethal Vulcan artifact. Do you remember this episode, Adam, that you already watched, apparently?
Yeah, I do, because I already admitted to having seen it, Ben. So I remember it as early as hours ago. What are you going to do about it?
I mean, like, I don't want to waste your time by dropping a veto on it. You watched it. Like, we might as well fucking review it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that was poor form by me. It really puts you in a spot, doesn't it?
we're like past 150 episodes at this point, Adam. You got to be more careful.
There are rules here.
Yeah, this is not Nam.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ben.
I'm glad we could come to an understanding.
Well, I'm not vetoing an episode I watched. That would be dumb.
That'd be hoisting yourself on your own Picard.
Yeah. Are you?
No.
Fine, let's watch it. Okay. I've already seen it, so you go and watch it yourself.
Okay, and we'll meet back here and we'll review it on the next episode.
It's what we do.
It is.
If you feel like reviewing our show yourself, you can take that 140-character review to Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is on there as @BenjaminRAHR.
We also accept 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you have 4 or fewer star reviews, you can send them to drunkshimoda@gmail.com and we will attempt to address your complaints.
Where we will stick those complaints into a plastic butthole.
We've got people working around the clock scanning complaints to see if they are the artifact that we're looking for. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for our other music. We've got great Facebook groups, Reddit groups. There's a Wikipedia
page. And great
page.
Moderators for both.
Yeah, great moderators all around. That all being said, I think our job is done here, is it not, Adam?
Yeah, I feel extremely satisfied with what we've done here, Ben.
Extremely, huh? Wow.
I feel better about this episode than any other.
Oh, God. Well, with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that really puts Picard's leather daddy prowess to the test.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.